So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verse 14. The chapter is entitled Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. Until what time do we? 15 past? Yeah, thank you. So I just read the verse, or
we all read it, or
okay. Sarvata panipadam tat sarvato kshiru shiru muk. Oh, this doesn't sound that. Sarvato kshiru. Oh, sarvato kshishiro mukham sarvata shruti maloke sarvam avritya tishtati sarvata pani padam tad sarvato kshishiro mukham sarvata shruti maloke sarvam avritya tishtati. Once more, sarvata panipadam tat sarvato kshishiro mukham sarvata shruti maloke sarvam avritya tishtati. So the word for word now by Srila Prabhupada. Ah, we just read. Okay. You can read the word for your on your. Yeah, no, it's okay. On your own time, you can read the word for word. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces. And he has ears everywhere. In this way, the super soul exists, pervading everything. Oh, I thought you said not. Oh. Sarvam avritya tishtati sarvata panipadam tat sarvata kshishiro mukham sarvata shutti malloke sarvam avritya tishtati sarvata sarvata kshishiro mukham sarvata shruti maloke sarvam avritya tishtati. Okay. So I'll read the translation again. Sorry for my inexperience. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads, and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way, the Supersoul exists, pervading everything. So now the purport. As the sun exists, diffusing its unlimited rays, so does the Supersoul, or Supreme Personality of Godhead. He exists in his all-pervading form, and in him exist all the individual living entities, beginning from the first great teacher Brahma down to the small ants. There are unlimited heads, legs, hands and eyes, and unlimited living entities. All are existing in and on the Supersoul. Therefore, the Supersoul is all-pervading. The individual soul, however, cannot say that he has his hands, legs and eyes everywhere. That is not possible. If he thinks that under ignorance he is not conscious that his hands and legs are diffused all over, but when he attains to proper knowledge, he will come to that stage, his thinking is contradictory. This means that the individual soul, having become conditioned by material nature, is not supreme. The supreme is different from the individual soul. The Supreme Lord can extend his hand without limit. The individual soul cannot. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that if anyone offers him a flower, a fruit, or a fruit, or a little water, he accepts it. If the Lord is a far distance away, how can he accept things? This is the omnipotence of the Lord. Even though he is situated in his own abode, far, far away from earth, he can extend his hand to accept what anyone offers. That is his potency. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated, Goloka eva nivasa tyakilatma bhuta. Although he is always engaged in pastimes in his transcendental planet, he is all-pervading. The individual soul cannot claim that he is all-pervading. Therefore, this verse describes the Supreme Soul, the personality of Godhead, not the individual soul.
Is it the first time that you came to Radhadesh? And did you come this morning or to the lecture or just arrived a few hours ago?
Okay.
You're together or?
No.
Is it the first time for you?
But have you visited another temple before or?
So this is a verse which is quite basic and at the same time very, it goes deep into our philosophy because it explains the essence of the difference between us, the soul, and God, because there are quite some similarities. We are the same in... It's been a while since I talked English, so it has to come back. But we are quite similar in...
How is it?
Yeah, quality. But not in quantity. We don't have as much of those qualities as Krishna has. He's all-pervading, as is described here, although at the same time personal. He's not just an energy. He is also that energy which is all-pervading. But he's a personal. His eyes, his hands, his heads even, multiple, and faces are everywhere. Because he's present as a super soul within every living entity. We have in our heart, there rests our soul. Who we truly are, the soul, is situated in our heart, but also all over our body as consciousness, as feeling, as touching, as being aware. But Krishna is present inside every single living entity, every entity that we can think of on this planet. There are 8,400,000 different kinds of living entities on this planet, most of which we are not even aware of. Like in the deep sea, there are many entities that we have no clue about that they exist. And under the earth and inside the earth, the smallest, from the smallest living entity up to Brahma. And Brahma is the creator, the person whom Krishna, God, put in charge of creating the universe. He didn't do it himself, he did it through Brahma, through this person in charge. And but he is also a living entity. He's not God, Brahma, the person who created. So even with him, there's the super soul. And he watches us very patiently. He is there for us whenever we want to turn to him. But the problem is that most of the time we don't want to turn to him. We turn away from him. So we find it hard of knowing how to turn back to him. We have no idea anymore how to converse with God, how to
connect with God, and that's what the Bhagavad Gita is all about, how to connect back with Krishna, with God. That's bhakti yoga. Bhakti means connection. Yoga means connection. And bhakti means with love and affection and devotion that we want to connect. Because we don't just want to connect with God, but we want to connect with Him in a personal relationship. We want that relationship to be there, not just from one to another without having much affection or emotion. There needs to be emotion there, because we all came from Him. All entities came from Krishna, came from God. And there was, there is always, but in our not even memories, it was in the past. We don't have any memory of it, most of us. So we want to reconnect with God. Even though truly that relationship is never lost, it's always there. Krishna always remembers it. For Him, it's always been there. It always will be there. It's eternal. It's an eternal relationship. It's our true nature. It's our true identity as being a living entity, having come from Krishna, being part even and parcel of Him. And then wanting to reunite and reconnect, and how to do that is described very nicely in here by Krishna Himself. Even He spoke all these verses, He spoke all this text, he explained it to Arjuna, whom He is talking to here. I think, if I'm not wrong, if it's not the other way around, this is Krishna. Yes. So Krishna is explaining, because Arjuna is on the battlefield. We can see the picture there. Krishna is the bluish person standing up, and then Arjuna is sitting down. And he is on a battlefield about to engage in warfare, which was unavoidable. So he's asking all these questions, because he's wondering about who he is and what he's doing, and why he is doing it, and how he should be doing it, and whether at all he should be doing it, and all these kind of questions. And Krishna was present at that time in his external form. Well, it's not an internal and external form, but he was visible to most people. And so at that time, he is a very good friend of Arjuna. And at that time, he was answering these questions that Arjuna had. Because we can imagine, if we're at the at such a moment in life where we are confronted with we might die any minute, then all these kind of questions come. If not before, at least at that time they will come, of who we are and what our purpose is supposed to be in this life, and where we are going, and if there is anything more. So all these questions came, and there was a big discussion, and this is the Bhagavad Gita. So that's an introduction into our philosophy. It helps us understand at least the basics, but at the same time, as Srila Prabhupada, who translated these texts into English and gave it further explanation, it's also encapsulates a lot more than what we just see when we read it the first time. Practitioners of Bhakti Yoga can read this book again and again and again and still find new truths into it, and new levels of understanding what's actually written there, because we progress. It's not just something intellectual. It's something we do with our heart. It's something we do with our whole being, so that it becomes more and more clear to us what is actually said there. So personally, I'm only a beginner, so I would like to ask some of our other devotees who have been reading the Bhagavad Gita what they find most, what springs at them, what jumps at you when you read this purport, what was your What were your thoughts when you were reading this verse and this purport?
What attracts you in that verse?
What's important for you in that verse?
Yeah, I like the what you pointed out. He's very clear what he wants. He's because sometimes our questions are not thoroughly answered when we search through several religions. But in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very clear at who he is, what he likes, what he doesn't like, what attracts him in another person, and that for me also makes it very realistic in seeing God as a person, because I can do specific things for him. I can offer him a flower and I know that he will like it because he says it. So it's not such an imaginative as sometimes it may appear, an imaginative process of, you know, and then even like what is heaven like and who is God and what does he do during the day. And Krishna is very specific. Yes, that's thank you for sharing. Any other thoughts? Mataji? Yeah. Also, if you look in this world where we are now, what makes human beings function is connection with other people, warmth and you know, exchanges and connections with other people, being able to reciprocate, that there is affection and sometimes arguments. That's also another emotion. So like you say, you know, for us it's much easier to connect with someone whom we know as a person who has emotions. Apparently sometimes they are human, although we know at least in theory that they are not, but it makes it easier for us to connect. Is that what you were saying? Yes. Dr. Mark Prabhu? Nothing. Okay. Was there any questions that you had so far, or? Yeah, it is, when you actually think about it, that his heads and his eyes and legs, they are everywhere. That is indeed quite mind-blowing. Even, it's after years of practice, it's still mind-blowing.
And that's why he's God. He's inconceivable. On one hand, no matter how often we philosophize about him, we won't get close to him. And that's also one of the things about Bhakti Yoga. The stress is on emotion and affection and love, because Krishna, he gives it to us. He gives us the understanding by which we can come to him and by which we can understand him a little more. Because on our own effort, with our tiny, tiny brains, how are we to conceive of someone who is outside and at the same time inside of everything? You know, who is in the spiritual world and at the same time everywhere here. How can we conceive of somebody like that? We have no conception of that. We can't conceive of that, because it's too far out. It's fantastic. It's from fantasy. If we wouldn't know that it would be, you know, described by he himself and by so many great saints. And yeah, and that's why we need books. We can't just, not by looking at the stars, we can't just find out everything about how the world functions, what the universe is, and where the antimatter or God is, or even the soul, you know. Because it's of a different level, which we can't perceive by our human eyes, which are material. How can we perceive spiritual things with material eyes? We need the heart for that. We need our own soul. We need our own spiritual matter for that, to be able to connect with those things. Yes, that's why we need guidance. We need, and still, it's up to us. It's often compared to metaphor of flying an airplane. You know, we can have people instructing us how to fly the airplane, but in the end, we will have to fly the airplane ourselves. So we have guidance, a lot of guidance, and we need it, and it's essential. But at the same time, we have to perform the process, otherwise we can't go further, you know. And there's a lot of mercy that comes along with it. It's also important. It's not just up to us, but we should work as if it is up to us. We should perform devotional service. We should try and endeavor and do everything we can, everything in our power, to understand and to to develop that relationship. But ultimately, it's also an exchange. It's because it's a person. Krishna is a person. When we go up to a person and say, "I want you," you know, it's still up to that person to say whether that person wants us as well or not. We can't just force ourselves upon Krishna either. But actually, Krishna wants us back much more than we want to go back. His desire is much stronger to see us reunited with him too. And that's why he arranges everything for each person, for each individual, to be able to come back to him in their own personal way, with their own personal path. Everything that happens, once we say, "Yes, I want to know God, I want to know Krishna," then everything is arranged in such a way that we have the opportunity to get to know him. But still, we need to take those opportunities. It's not just because our path is paved that therefore it will go just automatically. We still have to walk along the path. We still have to endeavor to get there, otherwise. And so it's a conscious choice of every moment and every day, every minute. It's not just because we join a society, even if it's a Krishna conscious society, that therefore we are, you know, we're done with it. This is, now I've done my duty. I have, you know, I've joined a spiritual community, and therefore I will be Krishna conscious. No, it's our consciousness. It's not just something we do automatically or mechanically. We can't do it automatically or mechanically. It has to be with the heart, and therefore it has to be with consciousness, a conscious decision. that we make. Any comments, questions, disagreements, corrections? So rasas are our main relations, emotions that are in our relationship with Krishna. So one is as a servant, one is as a friend, as a parent, as a lover, and I forgot one. Yes, more neutral, that we are aware that there is a God, and you know, but it's not a very active, it's more neutral. It's not positive and it's not negative, it's somewhere in between. So yeah, these are the main kinds of relationship we can have with God, and that's the pure form of those mellows, of those feelings. A parental feeling we all experience, some, you know, either as a child, being the child of, or as being a parent of. There are, and all of these are also, it's possible to experience these in the material world, but as Prabhu said, they are a reflection. When they're in connection with God, when they're solely centered on God, on Krishna, then they are in their pure state. But when they are centered partially on ourselves and on another person, another soul, another living entity who is not God, then they have a perverted side of them. They are a perverted reflection of the ultimate. And they will never satisfy as much as the original does in connection with God. Like friendship. We all have had probably friendships throughout our life, and they, at a certain point, they end, or either in frustration or because paths just, you know, separate and you start doing something else and, you know, you lose contact. Or so there's always an end, and there's always some kind of frustration connected with it. There's we can always experience, probably, well, maybe not always, but personally I have experienced that even when we love someone in whatever relationship it is, whether it's friendship or conjugal or parental, there's always things that we get frustrated with in the other person. There's always things that make us think, oh, do I really want this relationship or not? And that is something which is not there with Krishna. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. And even the things that apparently might frustrate the person or the soul is also a point of attraction. We see that when we go more into more intimate reading of more intimate relationships with between Krishna and gopis, that when he separates from them, it's painful on one side for them, but on another hand, it makes the attraction so much stronger. So the separation is actually an intensifier of the attraction, and in that way, every single thing in those relationships with Krishna, when they are in their pure form, uncontaminated by matter or material desires or personal desires for adoration and fulfillment of our own ego, then they every single aspect of them is, I wanted to say delicious, but it's not really the word I'm looking. It increases the affection, the love that is there. It's also its taste, but it's a different translation that I'm looking for, but I can't find it now. But yes, is that more or less what you wanted to? Yeah. Any other? Yeah. Oh, like that. Yes, I also noticed it while reading, in and on. Yes. Yeah, it is mind-boggling. It's amazing how little we are able to understand about these inconceivable things. Mostly because we are trying to conceive them. We are trying to understand them, and with what we know, with what we compare it to, which is matter, which is mostly material things, buildings, relationships. So it's hard to compare those because they are of a totally different nature. So, thank you very much. If there are any further questions, please feel free to approach anyone. Most of us are happy to talk about these things. It's what we love doing. So, also for ourselves to be able to, because as we talk, we get to see how little we ourselves know, and then we can learn from each other, and even from ourselves, because sometimes Krishna talks through us, and then we can hear things that we think, oh, how did I say that? Yes. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.